Good evening, workshoppers. We've got a whole new episode for you here. We're coming at you with the new quarterly dev blog update that we have for Diablo 4. And as it was hinted back at E3, I say hinted, they flat out told us, during Rod Ferguson's interview at E3, that this dev blog would be focused entirely around art and character art. And man, it's a good one. This is a good one. This one is a lot. There's just nothing but great, some disgusting but great, great disgusting things that are in this dev blog. And this is one that after like the original kind of like preview, or not preview, but like spoilers that we had, from E3, where they mentioned that this one would be more, art. And that is going to be, kind of like a fluffier topic as opposed to what might be the crunchier stuff with game mechanics, that there might have been a little bit of a community backlash on it, given, just how much the community has all been, we want items, we want in-game, we want items, we want in-game, we want skills and character progression and all those other types of stuff. Everyone's just been so focused on all of those things. That how are they going to go through and react when one of our quarterly dev blogs is spent talking about art? Now, it's something that is interesting, to me, as, on many episodes I've talked about art and, of course, like lore, story, music, and things. That I think it was probably the right decision, to go through and show off some of these things, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But I'm also kind of relieved that around the community, the reactions have been overall positive. I was a little bit, concerned that, there might just be a backlash from people being like, well, we want, harder, we want, like, numbers and info and such. But everyone really seems to be pretty happy with what was shown off here. And, I mean, the artwork is amazing going through. And, art was a huge controversy with Diablo 3. Has had some, there were concerns about some of the art direction and such, and even some of the people out there, other content creators and such, that as they've talked about things with Diablo 4 that they may have liked or not liked, they've always brought up, art, item design, character designs, backgrounds and things like that. The art with just the character panel and the, like, all of the icon arts and such were things that people were going through and dissecting, because art is a really important component to a game. It gives a feel and identity, and that is something that you can find with the undercurrent of all thoughts and feelings on the entire Diablo franchise. All of the worries about Diablo 4, a lot of the criticisms for Diablo 3 and such, all kind of stem from, what does it feel like? And that's something that, whether you are a hardcore, Diablo pusher that, you hit like the you run Chaos Sanctuaries until you hit 99, you go through and you get, your solo 150 clear every single season or what have you, that, the feel of what the game is one of the big proponents of why people continue to come back and play. Obviously, gameplay is first and foremost. The game can look gorgeous, but, be crap in terms of gameplay. But when you have games that are, like, equally as addictive in terms of gameplay, a lot of times you're going to go for the one that has a better feel. And I think that that's something that all of us can agree on, and one of the things that drew us into the Diablo franchise in the beginning was that dark, gothic look, that, kind of like that otherworldly feel, that there's not a lot of dark fantasy, like true dark fantasy titles out there. There's so many that, have like, say like World of Warcraft, and it's a super high fantasy, high magic and all that, and especially when you go back to like the original Diablo, Diablo 1, you're just a dude or a chick down, in the basement of a church. Well, that's how the game starts off. And it slowly begins to introduce more and more elements. You got zombies, you got skeletons, you start having like some casters, some demons, then you got bigger demons, and you got like animated suits of armor, all these other types of things, that it slowly introduces more and more like radical concepts to you. But it's not, you don't like walk out the gate and all of a sudden, oh yeah, there's a giant walking suit of armor or like dwarves or elves or anything. And you know, it kind of has a bit more of that groundedness that, you know, obviously with all the Diablo titles, things get crazy. I mean, you kind of like descend down into hell, not literally, but you kind of, you know, like descend down into hell in Diablo 1. You literally go to hell and watch a mountain explode in Diablo 2. And then Diablo 3, you're traveling across different planes of existence and such. You know, so there's always these elements that do get there, but you at least start off a bit more grounded in all of the adventures as it goes and leads up to that. And that's something that we at least are seeing in the dev blog, and I'll mention quite a few times throughout this episode, is just like I think that they're really nailing some of those core concepts of what people kind of associate with Diablo, even though it doesn't encompass the entirety of the experience, but it's like the aspects of the game that we remember. We spend so many times, you know, starting and leveling new characters, maybe never actually beating normal with them, or focusing so much on leveling and these key areas of the game that are more like low fantasy areas, that I think that they're really finding a stride in the artwork on these. And so without further ado, let's just go ahead and start getting in there, because it starts off, because I mean that's just so beautiful, that that look at that little kind of like Lilith in the background and such. And there's also, if you go on Twitter, you know, Adam Pezradar shared a wallpaper that you can download of this particular image if you wanted. It's so pretty. So pretty. And, you know, of course, the first thing, we've got a little bit of the preamble going through and talking about, you know, like the Rogue introduction, BlizzCon Line, the upcoming Diablo 2 Resurrected, and all these other types of things about what they wanted to go through and hand this off to the artists to give us a little bit more of a different take of the game, as well as seeing some of the customization options. And, you know, just right off, we get to see, you know, our blessed mother herself, good old Lilith. And I really like this piece, if I can, you know, get my own face out of the way there, as it starts focusing in on some things that we might not have seen previously, because, you know, we've gotten some renders and some artwork, you know, of Lilith, you know, from previous year's BlizzCons and such, and you just kind of see the outline of those tears, but this is like the first time that you actually straight up see that on like the character model, where they're really like digging deep into that look on her, and of course the lovely kind of like organic ridge structure that is indicative of anything demonic within the game. You know, and they go and they talk about you know, the concepts of character art and like wanting to go through and show off some of the styles that they've done, as well as talking to the technology that's running in the background. And one of those things that takes us back many, many, many years to the whole physical-based rendering. And that was like interesting that they actually spend some time going through and talking about PBR in the article, because that was like the first look that we had at Diablo 4, the whole unannounced Diablo project. And you need to know, and they were looking for artists and renderers that could do that, knew how to use you know, physical based rendering systems. And so when they go through and they start talking about that stuff, it's just like, yeah, I heard that term before. You know, they've talked about those systems. You know, we've seen that, is like, you know, that we're talking years and years ago. What, like 2017, 2016, like when the first like little inklings of that they were working on Diablo 4 in the background is when, like, some of those ones go back to. And they talk about just like going through and having like the updated engine systems, the things that they can do with this more advanced technology as opposed to like the previous, you know, titles, not just like in Diablo, but this is something that you don't even see like in some of the some current Blizzard titles besides Overwatch. And so that they're really using those things and creating a great pipeline of work that allows them to go through and put out really awesome looking textures and artwork while still allowing them the tools and the capability of giving everything a little bit more of like an artistic handcrafted look. And that's something that they talk about in the article, is that they want to make sure that like realism isn't the ultimate goal with going through in, you know, setting up the characters. And that's something that I appreciate, because when you go through and you try to have just like a true realistic style, it doesn't age well. It never does. Because when you think back, like say with Diablo 2, when you think back, like the Diablo 2 opening cinematic and then like the Act 2 cap where you see the fight with Tyrael between Diablo and Bale were like at the time some of the greatest pieces of CGI like I had ever seen. You know, that obviously does not hold up very well in modern day, and they've recreated those scenes and they look phenomenal, like little preview that we got at E3 with the new updated D2R cinematics. But it's like they hold up better than other cinematics of the day because they weren't truly going for a realistic style. They had an artistic look to them, and that's something that Blizzard's always done really well, especially when you go and you look at all Warcraft, not just WoW, but like all the Warcraft characters have always been over exaggerated. And that's something that you can definitely see like in Tyrael in Diablo 3, how he's just like ginormous when compared to standing next to Lea, especially like in that Act 1 cinematic when like Lea sets her hand in Tyrael's, his hand is like 5 times the size of hers. It is just like that's just like jarring, like just like how big that difference is. But it also makes it so that way it kind of widens you know, your expectations. You have that uncanny valley. The closer and more realistic something looks, the more you begin to notice the details that make it look unrealistic. And so scaling it back a little bit and taking a little bit more of an artistic license will really help make the graphics hold up over time. Because all the things that we see here, you know, like these kind of like little rogue callouts, like these look absolutely amazing. Like, because you can even go in and look closer in at the buckles, the leather, the cloth, you know, the skin, maybe not so much the hair, but the eyes and everything just looks so amazing. But how will that look in 10 years' time? You know, when you think about it, next year, Diablo 3 is celebrating its 10th anniversary. And how are these in-game graphics going to hold up? Because Diablo 3 in 2012 looked pretty badass. There was a lot of people back then that, you know, with, like I mentioned, there was art controversy with Diablo 3 back in, you know, 2010, 2012. And this was just when Path of Exile was first coming up. There were a lot of people that were all talking about, oh, Path of Exile just blows it out of the water. And everyone just wanted to go through and get nitpicky. But the graphics in Diablo 3 back in the day, aesthetics aside, looked amazing at the time and for what they were. And I think that the decision in Diablo 3 to go that more painterly style with the backgrounds and the vistas really helped that game. Because if you load up Diablo 3 now and you just kind of like walk into like the Slaughtered Calf Inn and then go up the stairs and you just look at like Lea's room where there's like an extinguished candle that still has like a little wisp of smoke coming out of it, all the books and knickknacks and such, all the attention to detail, the game looks gorgeous. Absolutely beautiful. Stunning. when you begin to zoom in on the character a little bit, you start seeing the flaws, you know, kind of like the flat planes and the, you know, it just like polygon counts and things like that, that obviously, while great for 2010 to 2012 era, maybe doesn't hold up quite as much nowadays. And then when Diablo 4 itself launches, how is it going to look in, you know, 2030? It'll show. Especially so having more of like kind of like the like artistic license on it and not going 100% for realism, I think is the right direction, you know, from the developers, because it will just have it hold up better over time, because it's like I accept that it's not going for pure realistic accuracy, and so then you can accept some of those flaws a little bit better. But actually, like going through and getting into some of this artwork now, this is going through and showing off like all of these are rogues and all of these are character models that you'll be able to use when you create your rogue in the game. The facial features, like the skin color, you know, all like the little like marks and such, because you can even see like on each of the characters, those scars on the neck and cheek are like all the same. You know, so you can customize your character like with those little marks and such, and it's gonna show up across all the different character types. That was, you know, say like, you know, again, you know, World of Warcraft, that if there's like a particular like feature on like the face or something, like it's only on that face model. As soon as you change like the base of the face model, that feature is gone and you can't have it. Whereas other, you know, more robust MMOs or character design systems break that down and allow you to have those components, everything from hair color and everything. And just like the one of the things that I also wanted to point out is this eye right there on her neck, going through and just like looking at all of the different character models and all the character art, like it's, you know, this is the sister of the Sightless Eye. We know from the rogue introduction that there'll be various sub-factions, and not all of the rogues, you know, are part of the Sisters of the Sightless Eye that we all know and love from Diablo 2, and that there will be others. This one, at least, is from there. So if you want to specifically make your rogue, you know, a member of the Sightless Eye, you'll be able to go through and wear that, you know, faction pride right out there on your character as one of like the tattoo options. And I wonder if this is all going to be there from the start, or if you'll be able to unlock like different like cosmetic options and features as you progress through the game. You know, that you can get different tattoos, like say on this character, how you have the kind of like the rune-esque type marks like across the face. If you'll be able to get different ones that you can put on your character to signify that you've beaten various components, or you can like change the language of the runes. You know, maybe a lot of the things that we've been seeing concept-wise from Diablo 4 have been from the Dry Steps, but what would be, you know, like maybe like some more like runes that you'd get from like Skozglint. You know, you go and you defeat the Act boss or whatever the nature bosses will take in kind of the non-linear story in Diablo 4. But say if you beat like a boss in Skozglint, will you unlock those runes that you can go through and put across your character? Like that would be like cool concepts of things that you could be maybe change up, you know, across like the different customization options and things that will really like make you unique when, you know, put in a backdrop of a whole bunch of other characters in town, or sharing your armory or something along those lines. You know, kind of like reminds me of the original intention behind the banner in Diablo 3, which got scaled back and scaled back and scaled back. But I'd like to see different types of customizations that you could do in the game, maybe unlocked behind certain achievements or things that you accomplish within the game itself. And then obviously like going through and seeing that eye there, and it's like, oh cool, I recognize that. That's something from a previous Diablo game. That's awesome. And then you kind of like you see the earring, and it's like, oh well, yeah, you know, where have I seen that star before, right? But then there was something else that kind of drew my eye. The tattoo that's underneath her eye, that little cross there, because that's not the one that we've seen in like the D4 artwork and such, you know, because that one doesn't have like kind of like the protrusions at the bottom. It doesn't go off at angles. It doesn't have that. But there is something that does. If I can go through and click through these images real quick. There is, you know, a cross that bears a very, you know, similar resemblance. Oops. In the game. Not saying that it's one for one, because this one has, like, the little tips kind of, like, point down a little bit more, so that it's more kind of, like, dagger-like. But that is very, very close to, like, the kind of, like, the Crusader shield. More so than it is kind of like that Zakharun cross that we've seen out there, you know, in the wild, that, you know, Blizzard hasn't really given an official explanation of. So that was another one that kind of like drew me in. That's like, okay, that's interesting. That's an interesting like little tell there. And obviously you've got all the runes. You've also got, if you don't want to do like the tattoos, you've got like the face paint options, like the different type of eyes that you can go through and put in. And then my face is covering this. So let me just swap out real quick, just so that way you can actually see, you know, all of the lovely, you know, facial options that you can get. And then, you know, the cloth and leather, the different colorations that you can have on those armor. Because that's like one of the other things that they go through and talk about, is just like all the different types of dyes, you know, because it's going to go, the customization is going to go beyond even just like your face in such, and that you'll be able to customize your armor pieces, you know, to a level that you never could even in Diablo 3. And like even like this, like this whole aesthetic from like the dry steps, absolutely love everything about this. It's just, it's so cool. You got like the hanging mummified hand, skulls everywhere. It's just, it's so awesome. And then it begins to start having kind of like that Conan vibe, you know, because like a lot of the Conan the Barbarian is like meshed mythologies between like European, Middle Eastern, Asian and such. And it's got, you know, kind of a this like, you know, Persian look with the turban and everything. That we've seen, you know, because we had that one character from one of the previous dev blogs that they showed off, like from the dry steps, like the turban guy with like the pustules all over his face and the skull pipe, probably from somewhere, you know, akin to that area. And I love like the desert zones that Diablo has done. It's some of my favorites, just from music and aesthetics, kind of like the pseudo like Egyptian-y vibes that we got in the deserts of Act 2 in Diablo 2, and then just kind of like the beautiful landscapes that they did in Diablo 3, like the Wisping Deserts and the jagged rocks. It was just all very, to me at least, very, very beautiful, like blends and meshing of the kind of like cultural architecture. They're like my favorites. And then also, like one of the other things, the guy's got chest hair. I don't know if you can make it out in this, but he's got chest hair. We'll zoom in on the male presenting nipple. And just like the level of detail that they're going in, you know, with these character models and such. It's truly amazing. You know, next we've got the sorceress. And this one is like really cool, because if you go through and you look, like, has kind of like the I can zoom in and keep on where I want to zoom it. There we go. We're getting there. I'm new at this. Hashtag professional podcast. The whole like bloodshot eyes as a customization option or something. You know, not the thing that you would expect from the hero, right? That this is definitely more of kind of like a villainous tone, but also it's still just like, hey, you know, like make your character your character. The look and the style, this also reminds me of what you call it, the Kabbalist from Hellgate London. There was some recent discussions between like Phil Shank and David Brevik about Hellgate London like last week on Twitter, and this one is definitely giving me some vibes as far as like kind of like similar character concepts with like the tattoos and everything, like the full body tattoos all over the character, you know, for the sorceress that kind of gives it that look. And we get, you know, there's another like kind of like we have this the cathedral in the background. This is maybe something akin to, you know, what we saw with the rogue, but it's definitely a different area. And you know, this one I have to give props out to Doomscream on Twitter, because he went through with a fine tooth comb and noticed this this panel in the background has what looks like Isandra, the sorceress from Diablo 2, you know, sitting back there in that third little entry in the panel. And then when you go through and you look closer, you've got kind of like the fire, ice, and what could potentially be lightning, you know, are things, you know, from the, you know, the Vajerai mages and such, you know, the big core elements of the sorceress, that this could easily be from Khajistan. You know, this is kind of like the home of the Vajerai, and where the sorceress probably has some connecting ties to. And it's a nice like little kind of like nod, maybe a teaser, maybe a little tidbit. And we also have just kind of like some rune like structures in the back windows, and again like a little bit more kind of like looks like fire and maybe a snowflake. It looks like, I mean, it could be a cathedral. It could be a sanctum that the, you know, the sorceress is training. It's just the possibilities, right? All those little tiny things that they could go through and add in, and then obviously we've got, you know, the rogue. The rogue model, you know, that we got and saw from the rogue introduction cinematic. You've got the same priest back there. You have those poor ladies in the background who, like, you know, are getting stabbed. But then, you know, I talked about it before, because you had the cupboard where the priest was holding the ears. On the outside, they're like getting stabbed in the back. But then when you opened the cupboard, they're the ones with the daggers and doing the stabbing. You know, so this, you know, could be, I don't know, maybe Fractured Peaks, something like that, where the rogue is coming from. But it's definitely getting some very strong identities with the classes that we've seen in a particular zone within the game. Now, this one I am reaching a little bit, because they haven't like really confirmed that whatsoever. But the fact that we've seen tons and tons of stuff, like say on the Barbarian, and generally is in like the Dry Steppes, and obviously, you know, we know from lore the Druid's connection to Skazglen, and the Sorceress's connection to Khajistan, that you go and you have like the rogue with like all this religious imagery, and then the lore introduction to the Fractured Peaks being kind of like religious, like monasteries and priests and holy men take pilgrimages there and such, that it is beginning to build like this identity. And so whatever the final class is that gets announced is going to have maybe like the swamp tribal vibe, since that's going to be in Hauazar, which is, you know, kind of like a big swampy area. Not the witch doctor, because the witch doctor is, you know, part of the Umbaro people, and that's not a playable area. That's the jungles that are going to be to the south of Hauazar and Khajistan. That in an area that Diablo 4 will not take place in yet. But it is also, where was it they were going through and talking about? Shoot, can I find it again? But one of the things that they did mention, like, in the article was, like, they wanted to go through and take a look at all of the characters that you can play, like, so far. And it's just, they mentioned that they wanted to add like a lot of identity to like the five character classes that are in the game as of now, you know, and that there definitely will be more like that. You know, they're not keeping that one a secret. They talked about that at the announcement, that they would love to go through and expand upon it. So there'll be more. There'll be more classes. So, you know, I wouldn't count the Witch Doctor out just yet. But one of the other ones that's really nice is that they went through and they confirmed that during the Rogue announcement trailer that they were going through and like pushing the limits of the tech and tools, because this was done with the in-game engine. That the whole Rogue cinematic was rendered with the in-game engine. And that's something that is like kind of true with, you know, some of the class introductions of Diablo 3. When you look at the monk, especially actually the monk, you know, character introduction, in the wizard were like that, those were like straight up the character models from the game. The demon hunter was also, you know, using, you know, like the in-game models, but at like a higher render, you know, something that they have in Diablo Immortal where they can actually like transition between like the in-game model and then like the cutscene model, and it's the same character in the engine, but it just adds like more more definition to it, more textures and such. And this one, you know, is there 100% straight up that this is just rendered with the in-game engine. And so that you'll be able to go through and say, like, if this was not just like a predetermined scene, like say if the Rogue introduction is how the Rogue class introduction is, like every time that you go through and you create character with a Rogue, it does that intro cinematic for you that we saw, that when you customize your Rogue and you go through and you fully deck out however you want that Rogue to look, you know, she'll look like this. If you go through and you create this character, when you go into that cinematic, instead of getting that Rogue, you'll get this one. At that level of detail, you know, and that is awesome. It gives, like, extreme high hopes of what this game is going to look like. And, you know, man, that's going to be awesome, especially from a storytelling element. Even though they don't really, I mean, they do talk about how, you know, art and cutscenes help them to deliver a more dynamic, like, storytelling experience. And it's something that they mentioned in previous developer blogs, without going into this level of detail, is that, like, imagine, like, so many of the cutscenes, like, every single, like, Diablo 3 cutscene where it does, like, the hand-drawn animations, where it kind of breaks up a little bit of the story in the middle of the acts, that those introductions and such are done, like, with your character. You know, not as super high definition and detailed as the, you know, by 3 they come, the, you know, Diablo 4 cinematic with Lilith and the summoning circle, it's a gate. But still, like, the level of detail that we saw in that Rogue cinematic, if I'm just playing the game and I get to see my character like that in every single cutscene, that's awesome. That is absolutely awesome. And just wait till you get your Sparkle Pony Rainbow Wings, like, in, you know, your Herodric Hamburger. Even better, right? Just wait for it. Everybody's favorite moment in, like, some serious game is having your joke transmog on and playing through some serious cutscene. You know, everybody's done it, right? It's gonna be there. If you follow me on Twitter, or if you listen to, like, a lot of episodes, you know that I've got a pet peeve when it comes to cinematography and movies. And that pet peeve is establishing shots. I hate establishing shots. I guess it's more so I hate the overuse of establishing shots. Like, if you've got, like, a 2-hour long movie and a good 15 minutes of the film is establishing shots, like, that should not have been a 2-hour movie, is my thoughts and feelings on it. I'll make an exception for Diablo all day or a day, because that is fucking beautiful. Just look at it. It's like, obviously it's the desert, and when you think of deserts, it's inhospitable, barren. you know, just to put yourself in a desert is to like fighting for your own life without having demonic invasions or undead scourges or gigantic mind control spiders. It's just you versus the wilderness, and you might not survive. Which gives such a great, you know, feel to a Diablo game. With just the lone rider out there on the ridge looking down at some abandoned quarry. It's just like the kind of like the feeling of desolation and loneliness in that particular scene. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I'm already going through and getting a feeling the dry steps might be one of my favorite zones in the game. Assuming that is the dry steps and not like the desert areas of Kedjistan. But because it's kind of like mountainous and rocky, that feels like it's, you know, that's what steps are, right? Those are the literal dry steps. And just like also everything that we see just reinforces like that kind of like that artwork and feel with all of these models. Like that is something that obviously is, you know, that is like a fantasy character right there with like the sword and the armor and such, but it's a bit more down to earth. Now I didn't notice it before, but that's a fallen head. That's a fallen head on the side of the horse there. You get to see the demonic, that kind of like demonic, you know, horn structure, and then the red flesh. Awesome. Absolutely awesome. That, you know, though that's just like I was talking about with the banner. If you are able to add trophies and things like that onto like your horse, and that's again just part of like your cosmetic, like look at how badass my character is, you know. That's just beautiful. You know, that's like I killed a million fallen, so I got one of their heads that I can equip to my horse. Great. But it goes through and talks more about the character customization, where you're going to be able to change like every facet of your character. Hairstyle, facial hair, beards, eyebrows. You're going to be able to add jewelry, nose piercing, makeup, body markings such as tattoos, body paint. Change the color of your character's eyes, skin, facial hair, your features, your body markings. And they also mention there's going to be some elements that are specific to class in order to help build that class identity, that background, that character, so that way everyone goes through and feels unique. They also talk about just like going back to the PBR and how, you know, they're really using the lighting in the game and the PBR, the physical based rendering, in order to make it feel like that dark and gloomy nature, allowing them to then go through and put, you know, certain textures and meshes on top of all of the different, you know, fabrics and materials, so that way everything feels and looks different. And so that way you can have, you know, like a reflective piece of metal that has like the kind of like that the base gray to make it look darker. And so that way, even though it's still silver and you can identify it as silver, like in the light, as soon as you go into the darkness, it begins to tone down, you know, very quickly. It doesn't have as much like a shine to it and such. And then we get into even more, you know, the character customization where they're going to be, you know, expanding upon the dye system. And we get to see, you know, this lovely barbarian set here. We're going through and looking at all the different types of styles of when you go and change the dyes. And it, you know, it leaves it a bit open. It makes it seem as if when you change the dye of the base material of the armor, it changes all of the supplementary pieces of it. So like here, that main color is the fabric. And as you see that the color of the fabric changes, the metal and like the leather changes alongside it in order to continue to be cool and supplementary. I really hope like this system is cool, and it's actually like one of the biggest problems with like the Diablo 3 system is that you would only change the color of the base property of the item, and sometimes particularly on like say like some necromancer leggings where like the base color of the item is just like the fabric on like the inner thighs, and then the actual armor on the outside doesn't change along with it. And so, you know, you'll have like kind of like the red inner thighs and then like the black outside, you know, or like reverse with say like the Inarius set. And so you'll change the color of the armor, but then the gold inlays and like the red fabrics don't change color. And so it can clash with some care if some colors that you're trying to do, because like, if you want to make the armor red, you know, then all of a sudden you've got red on gold, and it doesn't, you know, look as nice. With this one, it changes those supplementary materials, so that way it will always have a great aesthetic look to it. So as you get to some of the, you know, the darker colors have darker metals, you know, the brighter colors have a brighter colors, and you know, it's like kind of like you have like complementaries, so it's not like putting silver on gold and such, silver on yellow. And I do hope that even though that system there and that attention to detail and going through and making it so that way, there's an artist out there that in addition to going through and recoloring that texture a million different times with however many color dyes that they want to implement for the game, also had to go through and recolor all the textures on all the metal straps, rivets, everything. Because when you go through and you look at like this particular character model, like look at the rivets, they change color too. Like everything changes colors as you go and you swap through. There's nothing that stays the same on the armor pieces. Everything is being touched by an artist's hands in order to change those components. And I hope that they at least might consider the feature to allow the character to re-dye the different components on the armor. So if I wanted to do, you know, like say, like that white color, but with gold metallics, as opposed to silver, that I could have that option, that I can change, you know, each of those individual aspects of it. I know that that's a lot of work, and it's, you know, easier said than done when it comes to the development side, but that would be an option to just take it, you know, to the even next level. You know, it's like you have the tools, you have the talent. Do they have the time and money, I guess, is the other question. But just like some more looks, you know, of like the different things that you can change out with like the sorceress armor, and how you get the various color differences. Oh, is that not opening all of them? Oh, there we go. All right, and how you can, you know, have the character go through and change out the different, you know, things that change as you change the dyes on like the sorceress armor. You see, like, the stitching changes colors, the wear on the leather straps, you know, across the chest will also change colors, you know, to coincide with the actual base color of the leather itself. As well as just, like, this one, you know, goes and then takes a look at making sure that silhouettes, you know, still work well with the game, because it is acknowledging you're not going to be looking at your character from this angle unless you're in a cutscene. You're going to be, it's isometric, so you're still going to be kind of like having more of a top-down look at the character. And so you have to develop like the sets and models with that camera angle in mind, and that all of the armor sets will have two body types. And so, you know, you have the male and the female characters, you know, like here they show off the barbarians, you know, between the two different male and female barbarians, you know, wearing the same types of armor, and how it will go through. It's a bit more of a stark contrast when you're looking directly on at the character models, but then as you get into the more isometric view between the two of them, it begins to blend a little bit more, and it definitely is like one of those ones where it's like it begins to look more like a barbarian than like a female and male barbarian. And then just some of the looks at some of the other models that we've got on the rogues. Absolutely beautiful. everything is just gorgeous and amazing. And then we've got, you know, some looks at some of the actual, you know, look, the, some of the kind of like the character models in action. And see how it looks like in motion with different, you know, types of lighting and such. Kind of skip through. Because this one is one of my favorites. And just how you see like all the different effects. You see like the cloth, you know, freely moves on the character model, you know, as they go through and they move. They're putting in a lot more attention to detail on all the different aspects. And then just like everything, like it's not obviously I'm not going through and showing like the whole video, but it just is like, just like everything is just so amazing with the aesthetic that they're going through and hitting. And this is like going through and watching this barbarian, like trailer of the different armor sets of the different barbarians and such. This is one of those ones that for me like really drove home, like. It like the a lot of these character concepts look something like straight out of Conan the Barbarian, and it's something that I absolutely love because like it obviously looks like they're fantasy characters, but it's from like a much like lower fantasy setting. It's not all, you know, like angels and demons and things. Like this looks like it could be like just like an alternate past, you know. And so it's something that's becoming a lot more grounded. You know, it's like you're getting rid of, it's not having as many of like the high fantasy archetypes, at least that we've seen so far. And again, those things aren't bad, you know, obviously like Diablo 2 and had them. They're things that we really enjoy. And it's particularly like this model, you know, right here with the horns is something. Oh, and you know, because of the cropping on it, you can't quite see. But it is, is like that is Conan the Barbarian, you know, that straight up just is Conan the Barbarian. How is it not, right? Just how is it not? But I think, you know, going through and taking kind of like not just like the darker approach that they, you know, are obviously reinforcing that they're taking with Diablo 4, but at least starting off the game and having like those core aesthetics be more grounded in low fantasy. You know, we do have like sorceresses and like druids that can shapeshift and such. So it, like it's a fantasy setting, but it's not like all, you know, wings and halos and crowns and such. Something that I think, you know, bringing it more into like kind of like that more dark fantasy, like gothic aesthetic, is something that just feels right. It feels good. It's a very, very strong vibe. I think building off of those is going to be is going to resonate well. And we can see, you know, from the comments and such, is something that definitely resonates well. I remember seeing a Reddit comment earlier today that was like, "I'm sorry for ever doubting the art direction in Diablo 4." You know, and even just like the whole like sitting model, you know, is kind of like this is gonna have to be an armor set in the game, right? Even like the bone like amulet that he is that Conan's wearing, you know, it's what was it? We had that in, I think, earlier on. Where was it? I swear I saw it in one of the. Without spending too much time on it, but yeah, it's great. You can tell that this is like an in-game render too, because you know the cloths on the on, you know, are like clipping into one another. You know, and there obviously it's like it's in-game graphics and such, and you could have like different armor pieces that are not, you know, that are going to clip into one another and such. There's nothing absolutely wrong with that. I'm not criticizing it at all. But it's like when you see that, it's like, well, that's obviously an in-game render. You know, because if they were going through and doing that specifically for like a pre-rendered cinematic or something, like a B-roll footage, they probably wouldn't put in like little, you know, clips like that. But it's cool to see those details, you know, because you get an idea of like that is what it really is going to look like in the game. At least, like, you know, if you can get a decent graphics card, because this is probably going to kill my computer trying to play this game. And maybe if I start now, by the time the game comes out, I might actually be able to get, you know, like a 3080 to play the game on. We'll see. But another one, they're going through and talking about how they're using like the different textures, you know, in order to make the character models like look, give it like that creepy look. How it's like they want, like, this is the Bishop of Blood that we saw like in the original introduction of Diablo 4, and they talked about how they can use like different like texture packs and such on the characters in order to give it that look and feel, how it looks just wet and rubbery, like arteries and such. And you've got that Zakharum cross like right in the middle there, so you see he's all evil and corrupted, as well as like just some beautiful, beautiful pictures that we get. And they also commented, and what's cool with this one and then the Skeleton Lord that they talk about is how game design can go both ways between the needs of gameplay as well as art direction. Because when they're going through and developing the gameplay components of the Blood Bishop, they, you know, they detail as a caster that's got like direct damage and can create AoE bombs and such. And then it took upon the art team now that they had to try and communicate some of these mechanics through the art. And so, you know, they've got, well, it's like he's the Blood Bishop and he's covered, you know, he's like a he's all arteries and veiny and such. Well, what if he like throws out like blood clots, like they're kind of like pulsating like hearts. And when he like throws out something like that, you can see as a player that, oh, that's going to explode. You know, I know that that's something's going to happen that can explode. And how that they took like a gameplay decision of these are the mechanics that the boss has, and then the artists go through and take control of that in order to communicate it to the player, the mechanics of the game, just through the art system. But whereas the opposite happened, you know, with the Skeletal Lord, one of my favorites, and that kind of like they created the artwork, and this is something that we saw also like in like some of the original concept art for Diablo 4 that we saw during its introduction of like the skeleton family. And they have this beautiful, beautiful Skeleton Lord model that they went and created, and how then the design team went back and took that model and then created unique fight mechanics based on the visuals like that you know elicited. So you've got, you know, like that giant staff creates like exploding bone shards and all these other things that it's like the design staff went through, and it's like, you know, that is so awesome. Let's create some custom mechanics just for that character model. And, you know, and that's kind of like something that Blizzard, particularly the Diablo team, has always been great at, is that iteration of going back and forth on the design process in order to find things that work. And that there's not always a 100% set in stone structure that, okay, the designer creates a mechanic and now the artist goes through and makes an effect for it. Sometimes you've got, in that case, like concept art that then creates mechanics. That they just find, love, and you know, like go through and embrace. And then now we start getting into some of the things where they talk about, like the artistic detail for the game. And now we start getting into the creepy territory. And so this is some of the things that they wanted to go through and talk about. Like, you want some level of readability for different things in the characters and such. And they talk about everybody's favorite, the spider host. and how they can go through and break up this character model. Because the concept of the character is you've got this spider that's like laid these eggs inside of a corpse, and now the spider is like driving the corpse around. You know, you can even see it. Like, there, its legs are inside of the corpse. It's got these holes where it's going through and moving it, and it's like it's got like one like in the arm, and there's open ones, and it can move its arms in and out of those little holes and such. You know, that it, visually you can go and see that, and then but when you take it into like kind of like the isometric camera to break up the model and the silhouette, how like the textures on the spider are different from the corpse, as well as they want to go through and create a stark color contrast between, you know, the host and the spider itself. So that way you can see, you know, at a distance or at just a brief look that, oh yeah, you know, there's something else that's going on here. That's not exactly, you know, like the thing that I thought it was going to be. And I just, you know, it's like, it elicit like a feeling in me because we've got that. And what's the only thing that can make it better? You know, is like going through and, you know, putting those two together. Putting two things together. You got the art with the spider animation. The spider animation and the ear noise. I hate it. I love it. I hate it. I love it so much. It's just like, oh, this game's gonna be creepy and disgusting, and it's so absolutely beautiful. But yeah, you know, it continues on. We got a look at the succubus model, you know, for Diablo 4. You know, something that we know and love. It's got like the head wings. It's more reminiscent of like the Diablo 3 structure of the succubus, you know, from the one that we saw in Diablo 2. But just like you've got like the great outlines and such, and it goes and shows like the different details of the texture between the wings, the skin, the cloth, you know, the armor and the metals, and how they're really going through and pushing their engine to the limits with creating all of these different models. You know, here's the what's called the Pale Knight. And so something that you're going through and you're looking at a character that's just completely, you know, covered in armor. You know, what a fully armored, decked out character is. And so it's like you can see, like, those, they're metallics, but they're not, like, super bright and shiny. You know, it's like you're not wearing, you know, Saigon's, it doesn't look like Saigon Set, where you're just, like, this bright, shining, you know, beacon in the middle of the game. That, you know, everything has had its, like, contrast kind of dialed back and such. And the things that they can do with lighting and metallic surfaces, as opposed to like lighting in organics that they show off with this monstrosity of like a wolf creature. And yet you've got all these different things from the bone, the skin, hair, and you know, like putting it all together, you know, to create these great looks. If I can click, there we go. These great looks and textures, the amalgamations of things, and that really gives, it's not just, you know, this isn't Diablo 2 where it's just like, oh, the different colors denote the different types of textures on the model without, you know, going any further than that. And also to an extent, you know, the Diablo 3 engine didn't like quite have that to the same detail. You know, the metallics were just kind of like shinier than the other, you know, components on there. But it was still like just kind of like a flat cloth and a flat piece of metal. But these ones like really, really like you can see like that, that's metal and that's flesh. Like they're really, you know, using the modern systems to push home like the level and degree of detail that they can go and put into the game. And if they're crafting like the art, you know, to this extreme, just imagine what the rest of, you know, the passion on each of the other, like, systems, teams, and writers and such are going to. It's everything about the article was just beautiful. I love the direction that they're going, you know, with the game. It really shows like the level of dedication that they have, that they're, you know, putting so much detail work into character models and things. Like, how many cutscenes in the game are going to feature that succubus? Probably none. You know, that's just going to be a monster. But look at the detail in that monster. I mean, like, when you go through and you look at it, like, you can see in the wing how it's partially transparent. And when you have that backlit lighting, you can see the veins, you know, coming through the wings and such. That, you know, which you don't really get that feel on the wings here from just like the aspect of the camera angle that you might actually see it in the game. But they went through and they crafted so that way you can see all of those individual blood vessels and veins and such running through the wing if you're ever in a situation that you can have that. That detail is there, you know, in the model. And that's just, like, without a doubt, beautiful. You're going there. They really are, like, pushing this to the extreme when it comes to the art direction that they are. The options that we've got for the character models, like, we're really putting the role-playing in this RPG on this one. You know, that's definitely one of the weaker points in ARPGs, is, like, the character customization options that you've got. Normally, it's always through armor and such, and not a lot of time has ever been spent on it. Because, you know, it's like, well, the majority of the time, you know, you're not looking at your character, you know, your face is hiding behind a mask. That you're never going to see your face, you know, like, through the, like, 99% of your gameplay. But, you know, how much of that is because, well, it's just cool and we've never had the option to actually just show our face. And that now that the tools and the engines are capable of going through and showing it, that just that level of detail that you can add in. This is something that you see in other RPGs, like MMOs and such, particularly, like, say, Final Fantasy XIV. Other ones that have more of those robust character design systems, people will spend hours creating their characters and their faces, whatever, you know, kind of like fantasy or niche that they're trying to fulfill. You know, their OCs, or they're trying to recreate themselves in the game that we could get, and it's just like, it just, like, creates a stronger connection, a stronger bond with the game, which is only a good thing. And I've talked about this before in relation to, like, skill systems and the kind of, like, a more a higher level of permanence, and, like, the skill selections gives you a deeper connection to your character. But actually, like, being able to handcraft all of the features of your character is going to just exemplify that even more. You have more of a reason to want to play the character, you know, because you've personalized it to as far of an extent as you want to. And so you have, you know, I could play any other ARPG, or I could play myself in an ARPG. You know, that might not be like a conscious thought, but it's definitely something that's going to be running in the background of your mind. Like, kind of like a subconscious connection that you're gonna create, you know, deeper, more meaningful, you know, relations, like, with the character, and then through that, the rest of the story, and then the gameplay and all that, I think will just help the game at, like, a psychological level. I might be going too deep on this one, but just think about, like, all the feedback and such that there's always been on the game, or any game, that is like, oh, it looks cool, or it looks nice, or it doesn't look cool, it doesn't look nice. And that it's something that I think is really important. And while, like, the blasters and the high-end, you know, players and such might give two shits about any type of art direction outside being able to equip, like, some badass looking transmog or something like that, but the majority of the player base are going to be coming into the game based on aesthetics, like, you know, look and feel. You know, obviously the reviews and things like that are going to be big, but a lot of people are going to go through, pick and choose their games because oh, the trailer looked cool, or the artwork for it looked nice. You know, your average player, you know, the people that are going to make up 80, 90% of the player base probably don't really care about in-game itemization, you know, and while they might care about, like, gameplay, they're not going to read a 20-minute blog post about, you know, the skill systems and skill progression and stats and stuff like that, because it doesn't mean anything to them. They'll discover those processes and those mechanics once they get into the game and start playing it. But until then, the thing that's going to be making their purchase decision is, you know, the art. The things that's going to be going through and, you know, drawing them into the game, you know, are the things that they see, the things that they understand. They might not understand, you know, what a unique, you know, versus an ancient, you know, or a set versus a legendary, you know, are, or what a class skill versus a generic, or what affixes can roll or secondary affixes. You know, your average user might not understand or care about any of those concepts, but they'll care about this. They'll care about the vistas and the looks, you know, of the game. Those are the things that are going to get them to make the purchase in the beginning. And then those gameplay things are the ones that will go and keep them playing. So the artwork is something that is going to be, that is extremely important. And I don't think anybody, no matter how core, hardcore or dedicated you are, or how little you might care about the aesthetics of a game beyond gameplay, I think people can still agree at least that, you know, having good art direction is something that's going to create a great foundation. And, well, everything that we've seen, I mean, the artwork in D4 previously looked amazing, and getting to see the passion behind the people that are driving the art and seeing them go through and be able to share things that they care about and that they're proud of, and like these textures and such, gives me lots of hope. Gives me lots of hope that we're going to lose all hope and that the game is going to crush our souls in a good way, like any proper Diablo game should. And with that, you know, it's not a proper episode. This was just kind of like a little impromptu stream to go through and take a look at the blog and give my thoughts and feedback on it. I haven't really looked around at a lot of feedback from other people in the community and such, and I'll probably be going and spending the next couple of days doing that. So when I actually go and have a proper episode next week, which is not going to be Wednesday, so if you're listening to this, I will not be recording an episode on Wednesday the 7th. It might be on Tuesday the 6th or Thursday the 8th. I'm not quite sure just yet, but keep an eye over on Twitter, and I'll keep everybody updated. But unfortunately, a last-minute work project went through, popped up, and now I am spoken for on Wednesday night. But feel free to go through, follow the show on Twitter at the WM Workshop for updates on when the show will go live, or you can follow myself on my personal account at NineBallGamer on Twitter, or, you know, drop me a line. Questions, comments, feedbacks, emails, anything that you want, westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com. And then make sure to go through and catch the show usually every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, over at twitch.tv/blizzpro, or just do a search on YouTube. I know the last episode had some problems with some ads going through and like auto-placing themselves like every couple of minutes, and I promise that I will not let that happen again. I'll probably just end up, demonetizing the videos to make sure that that doesn't happen. Some of the new ad placement policies on the back end on YouTube have changed, where I have to wait until the whole video is done processing before I can change the actual ad placements. I can't disable mid-roll ads until then. And with the high-def videos, it does take a while to upload and process and before I get those options. I promise for a better experience than that on the future episodes. So don't worry, I'll make sure to go through and take care of that. And of course, finally, you can find the show on all the various podcasting platforms, Spotify, YouTube, you know, Stitcher, iTunes, all that stuff. But with that, it was a pleasure chatting with you all on this little bonus episode, and I will catch you all next time.